Blog Talk Radio.
Partnersincrimetours.net. Make sure you check out their page for all the books that they got going on and all the authors that they have on tour, and you might find some good ones. And here's one right now. So Dale, thanks so much for coming on, and thanks very much for coming back. How you doing?
Hey, thank you, John. It's great to be here again. It's not hot here in St. Louis. It's a very nice, it's warm, but it's a great summer morning looking at the arch as we speak. And happy to be on with you.
Wonderful. Yeah, well, that's kind of odd that it's not hot in St. Louis in the middle of the summer in the Midwest. So, but we took all the heat. We sucked it all out of the Midwest.
And we've blown it over to you guys.
It's going to be about 103 today, but it's desert heat.
Holy
so it's still
cow.
Kind of dry. But, and it's going to be good. It still gets down to about 60 at night, so we got about a 40-degree swing sometime in temperature, because that's what you get in the desert communities. So we had you on, and I just realized this because we had you on about 5 months ago for your first book called The Intern, and now you're back with your latest book called Sabotage. So give us the skinny on what you got going on now with this newest one.
Well, Sabotage is very different from The Intern. It's set in modern day. It's got multiple points of view. It moves very fast. It's all a day in America that America would like to forget. There are domestic terror attacks all over the place, not just in big towns, but little cities, out in the country. I mean, they're happening everywhere. And as the day progresses, there are four people that figure out, despite their disparate circumstances and everything else, that they have keys to the to unlock what's going on, and they don't even know they're working together, but they are. And I think it works pretty well. I think it's a very fast moving kind of a written movie, like reading a movie, because it moves very fast and there's a lot of action.
And from The Intern to Sabotage, because a lot of people are jumping into, and this is a standalone, just so people know, you're kind of writing in the same the same political thriller genre. And I guess the question then leads itself to, with everybody jumping on the series bandwagon, especially in this genre, the military thriller, it's like you see very, very little standalone books. Almost everything now is series. Why did you kind of buck the trend and decide to go this way?
Well, I wouldn't really call this a military thriller. I think I'd call it more of like a... it's not really international because it all happens in America, but kind of a terrorist thriller with elements of just kind of, I don't know if you'd call it, there's kind of a weird party vibe going on in the background while all these things were happening, or at least there was. And so, it's just my attempt to kind of draw the greatest, I wanted to write something. It just kept coming to me. It kept coming from disparate points of view. and I just thought it would be an excellent thing to write. I mean, I am starting a series with Mick Lord, the Kissing Persuasive Lips novella that's now free at various places. I mean, we're getting a series started there. But, you know, I just felt like there was a story to be told here. I think it really hasn't been done like this before. And that's always real interesting to me, to do something from a different take that no one else has done yet.
Okay, yeah, and that's something that's it's a little difficult to kind of jump into that fray, because it is kind of bucking the trend in a lot of people. But that doesn't mean that you have, you know, less amount of characters or less amount of things going on. And I think a lot of people, I figured out that I'm not a series reader per se. I'm more of a standalone guy. I can read series to a point, maybe 5 or 6 books, and then I'm done. I can't read 22 or 23. I get extremely bored. I ain't going that far. So give us an idea of some of the, you know, because since it is a standalone, you know, you have brand new characters, you have brand new things going on. So give us an idea of some of those characters, who they are, and why you felt that they were kind of the right person to kind of, you know, showcase yourself here in Sabotage.
Well, you know, Sabotage starts with the villain. You get a little idea of where he's coming from, but not really a picture of who he is. And then it shifts to back and forth between four people. There's an FBI agent who's been, he's kind of on the outs with the FBI. He was once their poster boy, kind of the face of the FBI. And then there was a scandal involving a Saudi princess. And since then, he's kind of had a low profile. There's a Vegas party girl named Caitlin, who, when we begin the book, she's passed out. And someone is snorting illegal substances off her belly, and she's got to figure out her piece in this. And then there's a rapper named Pal Joey, who should be killed in the blast, but luckily for him, he's in a limo with a groupie when the blast in L.A. happens, and so he avoids being killed. And then there's also Nassim, who, you know, the first picture of him in the book is actually the first image that came to me, and that is Nassim was on the way to become a martyr. I mean, he was out on a lake in a boat filled with explosives, taking him to a certain place that he had already arranged for more explosives to be. And he's from America, and he just starts to have second thoughts about what he's doing. And he decides that that's not what he wants to do, or at least has to think about it. And when he gets off the boat to clear his mind, he thinks he's got 2 hours before the attack. And the mastermind behind the whole thing blows up the boat with him not on it, you know, basically thinking he is on it. And so then he's left to seek revenge against CrossFit.
And now, what would you say is one of the biggest things that you worked on coming from the from your first book, The Intern, and now to Sabotage? I mean, was there something that you said, okay, I want to make this part stronger, this is something I want to work on? Because, you know, every author, I mean, there's never a perfect book. There's always something that they can kind of improve upon. So what was that kind of thing for you? What was the one thing when you look back at The Intern and now into your latest book that you decided, I want to make this sharper, I want to do this better?
Well, I think that, you know, there was a fairly long gap between my writing The Intern and writing Sabotage. And I think that what I thought about a lot was trying to make the writing a little more immediate and also not having it be from only one point of view. And that's a really different challenge when you're writing, especially if it's in first person, that's a narrative that kind of carries itself, and you have to worry about the pacing, but the story is being told from one place. And the biggest thing that was interesting about writing Sabotage was to try to do that from, you know, I mean, when you factor in that there are also scenes that are from the villain's point of view, I mean, it's really five different people that are driving it along. And, you know, that's a totally different experience in trying to make something fit together.
Gotcha.
So I'd say that was the biggest change from book one to book two.
And now that you're kind of in this role, how was it, you know, I mean, how was kind of the experience just all told? Because a lot of authors listen to this and they always like to kind of know, you know, the little tricks or whatever of the trade. And seeing as how, you know, your first book, The Intern, and you had all this marketing things going on, and now you're like, okay, I'm going to take what I learned. What other kind of things did you decide to kind of do that, you know, that you would say that you kind of learned from along the process?
Well, I mean, you know, there's definitely two different answers to that question. I mean, one of them on the marketing side, and then the other on the writing side. I mean, I think that Sabotage was just, you just kind of had to feather everything in there because you had so many things going on to try to keep something from dropping out. And I knew the effect would be good because the characters were so diverse, and, you know, there's a point there. And then really in the middle of it, there's another character, Red, that comes in that, frankly, if I were going to write another book about any of these characters, it might be her because she's a trip. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, so the biggest thing there is just kind of the layering and feathering it's complex in that sense. I mean, it reads very quick. It's not a Game of Thrones, you know, length book or anything like that, but definitely the intricacy was there. I mean, I already pretty well had it written when we released Sabotage. I went back and revised a little bit. And so from a marketing standpoint, I think I looked at it very differently and had some more hands on deck. But also maybe didn't do some of the things that, you know, there are just so many people out there that are claiming to have some sort of line on book readers and everything else. And I tried all those with Sabotage. And some of those people, I think, are just barking up the wrong tree. And so I actually, in some ways, cut back on that. I mean, everything is different, but it was definitely a very different way I approached putting it out.
That's interesting.
And I had a lot of things happen in the meantime, like BookBub picked up The Intern, and so it went out to hundreds of, literally over 100,000 readers. And then I did some other things, you know, that got some nice attention. And then Apple has been so magnificent to me on both books, both The Intern and also Sabotage, because, you know, especially on Sabotage, they gave me banners, they gave me the bricks on the Mysteries and Thrillers page. I mean, they've just been excellent, and they've really been great supporters of the books.
Yeah, that Apple is starting to come around and do some things like that. I've noticed they're starting to put some pressure. It's going to be a very small percentage of their stuff, but I think it's great that there's more outlets now for authors like yourself to be able to into that realm and kind of be able to get more outlets to sell, because it's difficult out there. I mean, you know, you're constantly working. On everything, and you kind of feel like sometimes, you know, you just never seem to get over the hump, I guess, and you kind of feel bad, and you're like, geez, can I just, you know, just kind of get over the hump? I'm doing all this work, and that's got to be frustrating sometimes.
Well, what I liked about the way that I went about this was I was really hesitant about putting any of these books out, and it really wasn't until I started learning about Smashwords and what a great job Mark Coker was doing, that I started to decide that there was something that wasn't a gimmick. And so Smashwords really comes at it from a different point of view than a lot of people that are just going about it on their own. And the biggest difference is, you know, they tend to start you on a number of different platforms instead of at Amazon. And I knew so little about it when I first did it that I didn't even try to go to Amazon myself. I waited until Mark had deemed that we had enough to go with, you know, to go to them with. And so when we released The Intern, it actually wasn't released on Kindle until a couple of weeks after it had started to have some success at Apple. And so this time, because I had had some success there and got as high as number 8 in political thrillers with The Intern and some other things, you know, we were able to attack them all, although we had such a commitment from Apple that we actually gave them, you know, a day early and did some other things for them as well. So, you know, I mean, I feel like if anybody's considering trying this for the first time, I just cannot stress more strongly that, you know, how great it is to work with a guy like Mark Coker that's really a big part of changing that industry. And, you know, he had a tremendous amount of help in making Sabotage get off the ground. I mean, Sabotage debuted at number 8 in Mysteries and Thrillers and, you know, in the top 25 overall at Apple, which I'm just very happy with.
Yeah, that's always fun when you start seeing your book climb up the rankings. And But then you start wondering, like, well, how many books is that? And you start trying to figure that out. And then you start becoming obsessed with looking at your numbers all the time. Like, okay, where's it at today? Where's it at today? And where's that right now?
Yeah.
And yeah, and that always happens too. But that's the fun part.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the fun part. And we did the pre-order, a long pre-order with it. And so at Apple, all the pre-orders count as first day sales. So it was a fun summer to put that, you know, into play, and then to see it climb that high was just phenomenal. And actually, Apple is still heavily promoting it, and we're a couple of weeks into it now, but I couldn't be happier. And then, it's climbed into the top 100 on certain categories at Amazon too. So I'm very happy with where it's headed. And you know, we're having some other talks about other things we may be able to do with it. We're going to have a larger release in January or sometime right after the first of the year with print and possible audio and things like that. So I'm just very pleased with where it's going.
Now, are you going to stick in this genre? Is this something that you think you're going to stick in? Do you already have kind of an idea? You said that you might pull a character out if you were going to and write about, but is there something that you're still trying to explore for yourself?
Well, I think that, you know, the big thing for me in anything that I've written is I tend to like to look at something from a different perspective. I just don't want to write a book that's been written. And if I ever do that, I really apologize because that's never my intention. And so when I've looked at things, it's been more about ideas that really move me than it has been about trying to fit in a certain genre, because I don't know if I have 15 ideas that are so closely related that they fit next to each other. But I am working on something that I'm just really knocked out by, called Southern Gothic. That's going to be the next one. And it's kind of a creepy Southern novel within a novel. I think it'll really appeal to anyone who likes, you know, I just grew up loving Southern literature, and then also just the weird occasional Harvest Home or, you know, just creepy books about writing and the South and everything. And I think that people will really hooked on to this one. It's pretty great.
And why maybe did you decide to go this way? Was there a reason?
Well, you know,
was it the character? I guess, of course, was it the characters or the stories that kind of did it for you? Because, you know, it could have been one or the other.
Well, I think that in this one, frankly, I had a challenge from a literary agent who said, you know, we're really interested in seeing what you do next. And I was sitting there and I had 3 or 4 things that were written and, or, you know, started on, and some of which I will definitely follow up on. But I just got thinking, what would I really like to read? You know, and I have a cousin, Jennifer, from Georgia, that we've always been frickin' frack. And just as long as I've known her, she's led me to, you know, these books that I wouldn't have found otherwise that I've just loved. I mean, Harvest Home by Thomas Tryon is the one that I think of the most when I think of her, but she's done it again and again. And so I was sitting there having just been issued that challenge, and I thought, what am I going to write about? You know, what would I want to read? And so then I was sitting at a hotel pool with my kids, and I was looking out the little, you know, indoor pool window, and I saw this old Southern street light, you know, I mean, it was in Memphis. And it just reminded me, I mean, just practically transported me to being in, you know, Savannah and Charleston and those kind of places. And just practically on the spot, the character and the setting came together. And then, you know, I've tweaked it a little bit, and I'm probably close to halfway through it. But, you know, for me, at least this time, it was kind of both. I mean, with Sabotage, it was definitely more little images and little pieces that I wanted to try to weave together. But with this one, all of it's intertwined in, you know, its origin, because it came to me in about 15 minutes.
And how has kind of the going on tour kind of been for you? Another thing is, you know, there's so many different ways now when you kind of go out and you kind of tour and you kind of do your thing. And now this is like your second Partners in Crime tour from the one that you had the intern. How has that been for you? Because now you kind of have, because with the intern, you know, you were new. Not a lot of people really know who you were, but now it's a little bit different because now you have a lot more people. You have more fans and things like that. So how has that been for you?
Well, it's been, number one, Partners in Crime is just great. And I mean, they're super to deal with. They follow up on everything. They are very big on letting you know where things are coming out and when it's happening. I mean, they do a great job. I think that really the whole thing, you know, it's just interesting because, of course, they come at you from a lot of different angles and things they ask you to write about or things they ask you to do. And some of those are things that I wouldn't necessarily do otherwise. And so I like that it's pushing in a little different direction. I mean, with all of it, you know, I mean, the nicest part of it is getting the emails and the Facebook messages and everything indicating that people liked the books. You know, one woman sent me something the other day, your books were the highlight of my summer reading. And, you know, as a reader myself, that's just, you know, fantastic. And so I'd say that interaction of something that you do in a very solitary manner, and then, you know, getting to go out and getting to hear other people really enjoying it, I mean, that's pretty special.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, that starts becoming cool when you start getting emails and people start going out, and then they start, you know, recognizing when you're maybe going to an event, and they're like, "Oh, Dale, oh my God, your book was so," like, "Oh wow, people." You're like, "I know people are reading because I see sales, but now I actually see people are reading it."
Oh yeah, I mean, it's just a real, it's just a very interesting process. And I don't know that when I started doing this, because I've just written for so long, I don't know that I would have identified that when I started as being the thing that I would look the most forward to. Because it's not, you know, I mean, it's just the genuine, when someone takes the time to write a note and say, boy, I really liked that, you know, it's just such a genuine feeling. And you know, they took their time to let you know that something you did meant something to them. And so that's
right.
Just that's a really special thing. And you know, I mean, I've just been really pleased with the way Sabotage is being received, because it looks like it's leading itself to kind of creating more openings and more possibilities. And I just think, you know, you always have hopes for your book children, but I think it has the chance to do some special things even yet.
Yeah. Well, We got about 30 seconds left, Dale, so I'm going to give you the floor to kind of let everybody know your websites, your social media,
okay,
all the fun places they can find out about you, so it's on you now.
Okay, www.dalewiley.com. I'm on Facebook at / Dale Wiley Author. You know, I've got various other, I'm at Wiley Law 2 is my Twitter handle. Please come. If you go and sign up on my mailing list, you'll get a free copy of The Intern. And go have some fun and you know, send me a line, let me know you're liking it, and go out and get Sabotage.
And we always like free books. That's neat. You sign up, you get a free book. Nothing more.
That's right.
And nice. You know, can't do anything wrong with that. Well, I'll tell you what, Dale. Again, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been great talking with you again. Good luck. Looking forward to see what you got coming on in the future, and have a great one.
Oh, I love it, John. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is author Dale Wiley. The book is Sabotage. Go to DaleWiley.com for more information. Check out Sabotage, the first book, The Intern. Not a series, but that's his first book. And see what you're missing. And like we said, you know, we bring these authors on so you have new authors to go find and discover. And the other thing we have to let you know is that Spence Radio One-on-One this month is brought to you by New American Library. It's the publisher of Somebody I Used to Know. It's the latest thriller from bestselling author David Bell, who Nelson DeMille praises as a natural storyteller and superb writer. Suspense Magazine, we call him one of the brightest and best crime writer or crime fiction writers of our time. And you got to discover David Bell, Somebody I Used to Know. It is definitely a book and an author that you should check out. There's available wherever books are sold. We suggest you go to Amazon.com for those books and support Amazon. And now we are going to take a short little break, and we are going to be right back with our next guest. Her name is Susan Slater. Her book is called Hair of the Dog. Very interesting title, very interesting book. So we will be right back after this. Welcome back after the break. We also want to kind of let everybody know that Hinchinson Publishing, you want to go to HinchinsonBooks.com and check out Daniel Palmer's newest book. And also, Camel Press is another publisher. CamelPress.com has some great books that they have going on. And we've had some of their authors on talking about their books. So check out Kensington and check out Camel Press for other books that you're looking for. Publishers are very important not just the authors, but you want to make sure you know who the publisher is, because that can tell a lot about the quality of the book. And those two publishers we recommend. So now we want to welcome our next guest on the show. Her latest book is called Hair of the Dog. She is Susan Slater. She is also, of course, on tour with Partners in Crime Tour. So Susan, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, John.
So Hair of the Dog, when you look at the cover, and scary all at once. So you got to kind of let us know a little bit about what's inside this book. So what is Hair of the Dog? It's the third book in your Dan Mahoney mystery series. So
that's correct.
So now we're into book three. So now we got a little bit more Dan Mahoney going on. So give us the inside scoop into Hair of the Dog.
Well, first of all, you mentioned it. The cover is absolutely fantastic. However, greyhounds are the most wonderful laid-back super dogs in the world. So to have it holding a bloody glove is kind of a problem. I hope it doesn't put readers off, but it is really a great cover, and it's a major clue in the book. Fairly recently, I moved to Florida, and luckily I can move my imaginary people with me. So this is my first Florida book. And I looked around and I thought, wow, 20 miles from where I live is the Daytona Beach Kennel Club and Poker Room. That sounds like something Dan needs to get involved with. And of course, you insure your dogs. So we have five dogs supposedly lost in a fire, and Dan is called down to Florida to take a look and see what's happened. It was a fun book to work on, and the people to track were absolutely super to me when I was doing research, and it was kind of nice to get involved with the track life, something really new to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, now this is the third book, so people might just be finding out about you and who Dan Mahoney is, so you gotta let us know, who is Dan Mahoney? How has he kind of transitioned from book one now into book three?
He's an insurance investigator. I knew I was going to be moving him around a little bit. And the first two books, of course, take place in New Mexico, Flash Flood and then Rollover, which came out last year. So he's going to follow wherever something has been stolen or misplaced or whatever. And it's been kind of interesting to write about an insurance investigator, something a little bit different, you know, not a PI, not the usual.
And if Dan were sitting down kind of right now, and I was kind of interviewing him, talking to him, how would he kind of say that he's been able to transition himself and grow from Flash Flood now into Hair of the Dog? How has he grown as a character?
Ah, that's a great question. First of all, I wrote Flash Flood as a standalone. I really like Dan. And so did a lot of the readers. I cannot tell you the number of emails I got, and of course from women wanting to see more of Dan Mahoney. So there was like 12 years between Flash Flood and Rollover. I wasn't going to pick him up again. And so I had to go back and get that voice and truly, yes, make him grow, make him change. So I also had to kind of change the characters around him. I had a love interest starting out in Flash Flood in Elaine Linden. And by the time I got to Rollover and now, of course, Hair of the Dog, I have her. I'm going to keep her around. She's turned out to be kind of invaluable. And I have her going for a PI license. So she's become an important part. He's looking at hooking up. He's engaged to her at the end of the book of Rollover. So he's moving in all kinds of new directions. And the most exciting character I introduced, really this time around, introduced her in Rollover and then made good use of her in Hair of the Dog, was his mother. And it's kind of a love-hate relationship, but I do bring Maggie Mahoney in, and I'm getting a lot of comments. People want to see more of Maggie. So he's become a little more family man, family-oriented, and it's kind of settling in nicely, I think, to that role.
And so basically it was 12 years just because you didn't have the right story for him, why 12 years?
So many reasons. Every once in a while, I just sort of cleanse my palate. This book is actually my 11th book out since 1999. I wrote an Indian series. Tony Hillerman was my mentor. And I have 5 books in that series, and then I have a couple standalone. So it wasn't that I wasn't writing. It was just that I didn't do any more Dan Mahoney's. I honestly didn't want to start another series. There are a lot of work, I think perhaps more maybe for me than a standalone, and I'm not sure why. Other than I always have to go back and kind of reread before I do another book. Yeah, I'm always doing something dumb like changing the name of a dog, you know, or something. But anyway, I hadn't thought I would do another series. But as I say, people seem to like Dan Mahoney, so I'm back.
And it must not be that easy, because like you said, you had to go back and find the voice. You had to kind of try to recapture some of that magic that you had. And now that you're kind of in the rollover and now Hair of the Dog, do you think that, you know, you've been able to kind of do that? What was the difficulties there, but now they're starting to filter themselves back out a little bit more?
I guess I have to make Dan really likable. He has a few rough edges, but they've got to be kind of nice rough edges. You've got to see a very kind, thoughtful man. And I think that really came across with Hair of the Dog and also with Rollover. I think it was W.C. Fields who said you should never be on stage with a baby or a dog or a puppy, something like that, because they'll upstage you. Dogs are tough to write about. But Simon, the Rottweiler that I gave Dan way on back, kind of takes the edge off, makes him an animal person, makes him really caring and warm, I think. So I've had to kind of pick that up and carry it forward. And then, of course, by the time I got to Hair of the Dog, my gosh, I've got Daisy and Sadie and, I don't know, half a track full of dogs running around. But it's tough to write about them. Just an example. If you feed the dog on page 5 and you don't let it out or take it for a walk and until page 25 or 50 or whatever, people write to you. You know, you're being mean and whatever to these animals. So dogs put another element certainly within the writing, but I do think they make Dan stand out as the warm, caring person that I want him to be.
Yeah, that makes sense, and that's good. That's good. And the other thing is when you are kind of rediscovering. There was one time there was Eddie Van Halen that had mentioned that he totally forgot about an album. He had to go back and listen to it because he forgot the songs. And so he had to go back and listen to the album to realize, oh my God, I didn't forgot how to play these songs. And so I always find that interesting. Now, you did do one thing in Hair of the Dog that a lot of people say never, ever, ever do. And I'm not going to give anything away here because it's in the synopsis of the book. And that's the only reason I'm mentioning it, because it is in the synopsis. But you did kill some dogs in this book.
Well,
and that's kind of a no-no. But I think you did it in a way that is maybe acceptable. But have you received any backlash or anything from that? Because a lot of people say you can kill as many people as you want, but you just can't kill a dog.
Well, I know, and it's true. And without giving too much away, gee whiz, here Dan comes down, these 5 greyhounds that supposedly burned to a crisp in a fire. And, they're insured for $250,000, $50,000 apiece. And he's got to get to the bottom of it. And one of my favorite lines in the entire book is one of the trainer kennel owners at the track that he's working with, who knows these dogs, calls him out of the blue and kind of hush-hush tone says, a dead dog just took second on the track outside Miami. So, wow, all of a sudden, those 5 dogs aren't dead.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But you still scared people by doing it. I knew you couldn't kill dogs. I knew it. There was no way you were going to do that. No way.
I know. And I don't want my tire slashed. You know, I want to be able to live in this community. And so I know you can't. You can't do that. And it was just such a neat thing to have these dogs show up. And there's a couple other clues that I think are kind of neat that I'm not going to tell you. Obviously, the dead dogs / alive dogs play, of course, a very big part in the book.
And this is more of a mystery. I mean, the readers are going to be going through, you know, kind of wondering, you know, with clues and things that you leave, maybe who's doing certain things. and then you kind of reveal things closer to the end.
Absolutely. In fact, when I say that writing mysteries makes my head hurt, it's because of that. It's because of all of the clues and the subplots and the dropping, the red herrings and the dropping of clues and then gathering it all up at the ending. So one time I was presenting, God, I was 400 or 500 people, and I was well into my presentation. Someone in the audience held up their hand and said, well, why do you write mysteries? And without thinking, I just quipped, oh, to stave off Alzheimer's, and went right on. And you know what? I think that's probably a pretty good reason. I mean, this is better than word puzzles.
Now, how is that?
I mean, just, you know, putting it all together, it really makes your mind work. It's a lot of, for example, and the way I write is kind of in scenes that are fairly movable, because a lot of times I'll be closer to the ending and I'll think, oh my God, the reader needs to know this in the first 100 pages. So then I kind of move things around.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep track of all of that, and it's got to stay on track. So that's what I mean by it gives me a headache and it's tough to do. I really set out years ago thinking if I could write mysteries, I could write anything. I think they're that tough.
And is that what you kind of grew up reading? Did you grow up reading the mysteries, the whodunit, those types of things?
Oh,
and that kind of what did it for you?
You know, who didn't read Nancy Drew, et cetera? Sure, it was all of those, all of the above. And then of course television, early television. I fell in love with Twilight Zone, and you know, just anything that had a plot and a good plot, but started out at a point, had a middle, and then had a good strong ending.
Yeah, and I always loved. I mean, you know, I was a big Agatha Christie fan, and I read a lot of her stuff, and I loved The Murder She Wrote. So I like to try to figure out those.
Oh
puzzles.
My gosh, yes.
But now, were you always the one who liked to try to figure out the puzzle before the end, or did you just want to read the book and just let it be given to you, and you weren't really gonna do it that way and not try to figure it out?
Well, you know, a little bit of each, I guess. I just think it's fun though to get so wrapped up in a book that you don't care, that you so trust that author, and you just sort of, you know, go hand in hand to the last page. I can never understand people who tell me, especially with mysteries, oh, I always read the last chapter or the last page first. I that's sacrilegious. I could never do that. That's horrible. You know, I want to be led down that path and surprised.
So you don't, yeah, so you just kind of like to just kind of let it flow and not really worry about trying to figure that out. Because sometimes you get frustrated, and then you think you figured out, and you're like, I didn't even see that clue.
I know.
I have
clue. And I love that.
Like, damn it,
I didn't
see the freaking watch. I missed the watch on the wrist, and then they didn't have the watch, and that was the whole main clue, and I could have got it the whole thing. I always found that interesting, and that's something that I always, I kind of try to figure it out, but I don't know. It's sometimes really difficult. I think it's easier in a TV show than a book to kind of figure out who did it, because there's so many little subtle hints that you can give in books, and then when you explain it all, you're like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that. I didn't think about the shadow in the corner was different time of day.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it does work much better on the screen, you know, and you can see that shadow, or you can, you know, there's some foreshadowing in some way. Whereas in a book, you know, it's just sort of you, the author, and your imagination, and can kind of be fun.
So is there a character in this book that you introduced that you had that kind of surprised you, that ended up having a bigger voice than you thought that they were going to have?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That's his mother. In Rollover, I have her, because he ends up, the book starts out, he's literally been in a rollover and he's in the hospital. And his mother, who's on some sort of dance cruise in the Caribbean, has to make it to port and fly into Santa Fe and to see him, et cetera. And it was just sort of in passing. I didn't spend much time with her. And then this book, she really took a more important part, and it was fun writing her. You know, she wears the boyfriend shirts and the jewelry, has the dyed red hair. She's 72, or at least that's all she admits to. And you know, and is still running around, you know, with the boyfriends and the cruises. And she turned out to be fun to write about.
So, and it's safe to say in book 4, we're going to see a lot more of her.
Oh, gosh, you have no idea. A book four, I'm in Florida now, and I said earlier, and there's so many things that, of course, not just here, but everywhere, but that are somewhat stranger, you know, than fiction. And one of them is a town called Casadega. It's been on television a number of times where somebody said you have to be a medium or at least some sort of, you know, read cards or whatever, some sort of psychic to live there. So of all things, Dan's mother is going to move there in the next book. Basically, there are some relics stolen from the Basilica in St. Augustine. The name of the book is Epiphany, and Lane goes underground as a nun, and it's going to be fun.
And that's always cool when you're kind of, you know, building a story, and then you start looking at that kind of blank canvas, and you start, even though you're writing a series, you have, you know, you already have Dan, and you already kind of have some things down. But then you're going to have to start figuring it out. And then you're going to have to start seeing what is the new story going to be and what kind of things can I do to make sure that I keep things fresh. Is that one of the things that is most challenging as you continue on now with the books? Because now you're going to be in book four.
You know, one of the most challenging things and important things I've always said before I even start writing, I have to know what's worth dying for in a mystery. And this one I hope is going to be a little more, number four, a little more thriller-esque. Something has to be so big, whatever that it's really, it's going to change lives. It's going to get some people killed or at least a person or two. And so that's always my first challenge. And so I know now, you know, I've got, well, the others that I'm looking at, a lot of shrimping in this area. So I figure shrimp boats, which are heavily insured, maybe I'll do a little book called Widow's Walk. And then, of course, if I didn't write about Daytona and NASCAR, something would be wrong with me. So I might do something called The Fast Lane. But in each of those, as you can see, there's something that has to be insured enough to get Dan involved. And, of course, something worth dying for.
Yeah, you got to have that. You got to have that purpose.
Right.
And I think a lot of authors don't kind of understand that purpose. I was talking to an author yesterday, and I said, you got to make sure you tell. And he was working on his book, and I said, you got to make sure you tell the reader why he has to continue instead of just putting his hands up and walking away. I said there has to be a reason. Otherwise, why wouldn't you just get in the car and leave? So there has to be a reason for them to want to have to do what they're doing. And I think that a lot of people don't really think about that. They don't. And I think that sometimes books fall short because they don't have that purpose. They don't have that pull of, you know, why is the reader doing what he's doing? You know, or I mean, not the reader, but why is the person doing what they're doing?
I couldn't agree more, and I'll take it one small step further. David Moss, the editor, writer, who holds a lot of workshops, and years ago I attended one, and he made a big point of saying there has to be tension on every page. And he kept saying, I don't care what you're writing, what kind of book, what genre, there has to be tension. Your reader has to want to turn the page. So taking what you said down even to that basic level, I think that's what I teach a lot of writing, and it's one of the things that's kind of tough, but I spend a lot of time with individuals trying to get that tension, that reader's got to buy in and want, you know, to turn the page, literally.
Yeah, there's Stephen James mentions that. He says, he goes, no book is plot-driven or character-driven. He goes, it's only tension-driven. And that was very true. And he goes, it's only tension driven. So that's what you need to focus on. And it's like, that is very true that you have to have that tension. You have to keep that reader engaged because there's so many options for them to go to that if they don't go to yours and they go to someone else's, then you're done. That's it. I mean, that's just the way it's going to go.
Exactly. Yes. Again, we're back to that first page, first paragraph, first line. You know, if you don't, of course, the old tried and true hook. But if you don't capture that reader, you're lost. And they have so many choices, you know, and they'll put your book down and never come back to it.
Yeah. Even if they get it for free, it's like, well, I don't care. I'm not going to buy it. They're going to be like, well, thank God I didn't buy it. I got it for free, so I don't feel cheated.
Yeah. But it's still their time, and I think we all feel time is important. And you know, you spend a few hours with a book, so if it doesn't capture you, you don't want to spend that time.
Yeah, definitely time is what I view as your number one asset. I know it's difficult when you're young to think that way, but, you know, I turn 45 next week, and it's like, yeah, time is my number one asset. That's the one thing that, you know, I value now is time, because there's only so much of it. Money is kind of endless. You can have whatever kind of money you want if that's what you want. You can buy as many cars as you want or as big a house as you want, but you can never get back time. Ever.
Exactly. Right. No, the money comes and goes, but boy, time, when it goes, it's gone. And people don't realize that. But happy birthday. Was that in arrears or in advance? Did you say you're turning 45?
Next Sunday. So a week from today, I turn 45.
Oh, marvelous. I have a birthday this month, too. Good month.
Okay, here you go. So you're a Leo.
Well, no, I'm actually a Virgo. I'm at the end of the month. So.
And I
think, yeah, and I think that's cool.
I'm on the cusp. I can either be a Leo or a Virgo, depending on which website or which magazine I read. My birthday falls on both of them. So
right,
I'm already.
Right.
So I was already born a built-in schizophrenic.
Oh, I'm lucky then to be on the 31st. But I think, you know, if one believes that way, Virgos, you know, what do I want to say, stick to task, and they know how to get things done and all of that. So I think it's a good sign for a writer. How's that?
Yeah, that is. That's a good sign. But now, since we're talking about tension-driven and everything like this, but is there still a story that or a plot that you want to get into that you just don't feel right as Dan? That you don't feel right is a story that Dan would want to do, that you're just going to go ahead and just bring it out anyway because you feel so strongly about it.
Oh, wow. I swear you're reading my mind. As I kind of said earlier, I sort of cleanse my palate, my writing palate between mysteries, and I wrote about I guess it's 4 or 5 years now, a little women's fiction called 0 to 60, which was kind of 70% memoir, which has turned out to be a great fun book, and I enjoyed it. But what's really interesting is that I have a book with my agent right now in New York that she likes and I like, and it's more, I guess you would call it a family saga. And I really enjoyed writing it. I finally finished it. It took me about 10 or 12 years of writing off and on. But it's a book I like a lot. And it's not a Dan. It's not a mystery. As I said, starting out in 1912, and I think I go through the 1950s.
And that's going to be something that's different from you, is having to kind of write back into something that is non-tech related, having to, you know, go to an area where you never lived, and that's just going to be a new challenge. And like you said, cleansing your palate, that's also a challenge for, you know, your writing and trying to keep yourself fresh, not just your books, but just your mind and kind of how that is.
Exactly. And a big challenge because it's more of an historical novel also. And but again, as I say, it's something I like to challenge myself, and I think it's important, you know, to try different things. In fact, we were talking about Rod Serling earlier in Twilight Zone. I had a short story that made the anthology from Tor to commemorate 50 years of Twilight Zone about, oh gosh, I guess 4 years ago. And I wrote a little paranormal, Eye for an Eye. And that was fun. I'm not a paranormal writer, but it's just great fun and very challenging to do something different. I think it helps me. Then when I come back to mysteries, then I'm a little fresher. I'm not just grinding them out.
Well, we got about a minute left. So what I want to do is give you the last word to kind of tell everybody, social media, website, all that kind of fun stuff, anything you kind of want to get out there that we haven't touched on. I will leave the last minute up to you.
Okay. Fine. Well, first of all, thank you so much, John. This has been delightful.
Thank you. Just
a lot of fun for me. And of course, you can find me at Susan S. Slater. There's an S in the middle, SusanSSlater.com, and that has to do with my mysteries. If you're interested, anyone's interested in the 0 to 60 book, that is another website, Susan0to60.com. Gosh, I'm on Facebook, Susan Slater. And, you know, I suppose all of the usuals. I'm just looking forward to writing more Dans. And I have been so thrilled with Hair of the Dog. I didn't, when I started out writing it, think of Greyhound, A Ticket Home, and all of the wonderful, wonderful people who really work to find those dogs homes after they leave the track. But it's been absolutely so gratifying, and I would write that book 100 times again had I known how wonderful it is to meet those people and to be helpful.
And there you have it. So that was fun. We had some fun.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much for coming on. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we had fun. You know, Hair of the Dog is the book that's out now, book 3 in your Dan Mahoney series. And just from the titles and just from the, you just know that, you know, it's not too intense. You know, there's just, it's not a lot of intensity. I mean, there's, you know, there's tension, but it's a little different. You know, it's a little different kind of intensity where, you know, it's more of a fun style, I would have to say.
Yes. Yes.
That's
it
what
is.
I like. Yeah.
Yes,
well, Susan,
I try
we
to
want
entertain.
To thank, yeah. And we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been delightful. Wish you the best of luck. Can't wait to see what you got coming up. And good luck with the rest of your tour here on Partners in Crime.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John.
All right. Have a good one.
Ah.
So, again, everybody, that was Susan Slater. Go to SusanSslater.com for more information on the book Hair of the Dog and all the other books that she has out. Dan Mahoney series. This is book 3 that she has here in Hair of the Dog. And, you know, again, PartnersInCrimeTours.net is where these authors are. If you want to check out that website, you'll see all the authors on tour. Not all of them stop in here on Suspense Radio, and that's okay. But we have a lot of fun speaking with who we do speak with and finding new authors for you because, you know, we don't know them all. So it's great to be able to bring them on to you. So we want to thank you all. Remember to check out SuspenseRadioNetwork.com for more information on this show and all the shows we have on the Suspense Radio Network, Beyond the Cover and Crime and Science Radio. Will be back in September. They took a couple months off. They wanted to reload and recharge their guests. And so they got some good ones coming up. You want to make sure you stay tuned for that. So until next time, everybody, we will see you later and say keep reading.